Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, November the 14th, 318th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace. Hey, guy.
How are you doing?
Hey, it's a week from Thanksgiving.
Hey.
Just got to figure out what to do. I think this is going to be the first one without any kids home.
Hmm.
Or without both of them. I think last year both of them were home. So, yeah, it'll be a little...
quieter, not the big family scene.
Well, it'll be different. I don't know, quiet or not.
You going to go to Denny's for Thanksgiving? Is that what you're going to do?
You know, I used to... it was one of the curious things. Harvey Harper was a buddy, and he would take the family for Thanksgiving to the Reek Inn.
Hmm.
And for Christmas. And it was always kind of, huh, that's interesting. Now I understand, on a couple different levels, why that would be the case. I mean, just... it'll just be different. Let's just say it that way. And all friends, be watching out. The Papsteins may be doing a Thanksgiving Day crawl. but if that does happen, there will be stolen or salsa coming along with us, so we won't totally break everybody's bank. This afternoon, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about what's going on at the state level now that the elections are done, some of the propositions are locked in, and the assembly now is all in the hands, along with the governor, of one party, what that may mean, what it may not mean also. Get an update on the general plan and a couple of other things also. We'll do that all when we come back.
I'm Mark Biette with today's garden tip about not being a prunomaniac. The conscientious gardener needs to know that each kind of plant has its own best time to be pruned. Avoid shearing flowering plants into shapes which really look unnatural. Thin flowering shrubs with a hand pruner. I'm Mark Biette with today's garden tip.
You've got to get up pretty early in the morning to hear Mark Biette and his wealth of gardening knowledge. 5 to 7 a.m. Sundays on KWSW 980.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and information time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. Let's see if we can get a giggly one, huh? That would be fun. Okay, here we go. From Gail Sheehy. When men reach their 60s and retire, they go to pieces. Women go right on cooking. Oh, that's almost a Thanksgiving quote, isn't it? Almost.
Could work.
Hey, is that one of those things that I am excited that you guys have?
Hmm? This?
Yes.
iPad?
Yes. I've been pushing for that thing for like 3 or 4 years for you guys.
Oh. Well, we're starting to use them for... other meetings. See, we don't yet have our board packets on them because they're so huge, but each of us has been starting to kind of get used to using them. I find it really handy for other meetings I go to, like, you know, REDEC, Workforce Investment Board, First Five, things like that, where I can just carry my packet with me on here and not have to have
so
yet
these
another
like your crib notes then is basically what you're saying.
Well, no, it's the whole
for
the whole
show.
Agenda.
Yeah.
Oh, for the agenda?
Yeah,
actually for just
cool.
a reminder of the results on some of the ballot measures that I thought we were going
to
talk
about.
So do you have
to tap those in and still go out, or is that a receptacle and you have it programmed so, like, you know, the Secretary of State, whenever the finals were in, everything gets dropped in, or from the county?
Secretary of State's website just has a link that during election night it just updates every few minutes as results come in. The
right,
county elections website updated like, you know, 3 or 4 times over the course of the evening. Comes in a little bit slower.
That's what I think we tapped into for the station websites, just to have that stuff there. Were you surprised at the state level of what won or passed or what didn't win or didn't pass?
There are a couple of surprises there. Surprises or disappointments. Prop 37, I was disappointed to see that one didn't pass. That was one that our board had taken a position of support on. And it seems like just such a simple thing. How can you be opposed to knowing what's in the food that you put in your body? And it's not a pejorative thing. It's not, you know, a tax on GMO foods or anything like that. It's just saying, you know, if you're eating something that wasn't created through the normal methods that food's been created by, you know, including selective breeding and all of those kinds of things for millennia, then, you know, you should be able to know that. If it's something that was created in a laboratory by putting, you know, a fish gene into a tomato or something like that, Maybe people should know that.
I had a buddy of mine who, and he kind of, he apologized before he said his source, which was NPR, said that with Monsanto being the primary holder of all of the GMO-based foods, that when it's out in the field growing, because it's such a strong product genetically, is that when there's a cross-pollination with the field next door,
it'll wipe it out.
It becomes the GMO, the strong one, so that it's going to be more challenging than like the heirloom tomatoes and some of the old fancy roses and things like that, to try to find something that isn't or that hasn't been advanced because of genetic engineering in the next little bit. And I, that's kind of interesting.
And a lot of the genetically modified foods are, they're proprietary and they're non-seeding, so that you have to buy new seed each year, so that you can't just, you know, plant 1 year and take a portion of your best crop to let it go to seed and use that to plant the next year. You have to buy new seed each year, which is, you know, real difficult, a real problem when we start talking about areas where, you know, we have starvation issues. And now farmers in these, some of these countries, and this has happened in foreign countries, where hearing a weird buzzing going
sounds
on.
Sounds like we're
there
at the racetrack now.
Someone with a power saw over there and cutting down your antenna.
So, well, maybe, hopefully.
Well, if we go out, people will know why.
Yeah.
So, but
it's your fault.
Yeah. So, anyway, so I was I was disappointed to see that one pass. I think that there was.
But how many years did it take before the labeling of food products?
The nutritional labeling and ingredients labeling.
And the menus, and I mean, all that stuff that takes time and takes effort doesn't ever seem to be an easy one.
Yeah, and, but then once it's in place, we all accept it, and we all see the benefit of having that there. And to me, you know, with genetically modified organisms in our food, you know, to label is not to say they're a bad thing. There's, you know, there are advantages. There are good things about them in some cases. But to say that people shouldn't even be able to know that, it assumed that there's a pejorative there, that it's a bad thing. But, you know, if where there's advantages to it, you'd think that the industry would want to be able to advertise that and be able to say this is a good thing. If they believe it's a good thing, why don't they want to put that on the label and tell folks?
Well, it could be like organic, too. Maybe the definition isn't clear yet.
But right now, folks that want to advertise, or, you know, that want to differentiate their food in the marketplace as, you know, normal, organic, natural, whatever, they have the obligation of labeling, whereas the GMOs don't.
It's 319.
There's a brand new show on KEKA 101 Thunder Country, Country Gold with Randy Owen, Sunday evenings from 8 till midnight. It's a four-hour intensive music show hosted by the lead vocalist of the group Alabama. Country Gold will feature 13 songs per hour and highlighted music from the 70s to the mid-90s. Be sure to listen to KEKA 101 Thunder Country, Sunday evening from 8 till midnight. Country Gold with Randy Owen.
Oh, one of the fans is mad? Oh, okay. All right. 3-2-1. Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times, 324. We're back talking shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace. Mark, as you consider some of the other, the non-GMOs at the state level, one of the things that's been kind of kicked around a little bit, Gary Eagles mentioned it Monday on the show, was the fact that the Democrats now own both the Senate and the House at the state level, and they've got the governor's mansion. Okay. Two schools of thought at that point. One, the inmates are running the asylum. Two, all responsibility is now on the party.
Mm-hmm.
Both carry certain degrees of weight and responsibility associated with that. What kind of sense do you have about this?
It's going to be interesting, particularly because Proposition 30, which I was watching closely on election night because it started out losing and, you know,
comfortably losing, and all of a sudden it became comfortably winning. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a big concern from a local government perspective. If Proposition 30 failed, California was gonna suck really bad. Our ability to do some of the basic things that people expect us to be able to do was going to be seriously marginalized. So I was glad to see that gaining momentum over the course of the evening and come out comfortably ahead. But Prop 30 was really written as an attempt to get beyond the gridlock in the legislature. And, you know, it was the governor's vow to take things directly to the voters in terms of any kind of revenue increases. And even when in the case of this, it's just replacing revenues that were there just a short time ago and had termed out. So it's not a tax increase. It's just keeping taxes at their existing level.
One of the things that Gary had indicated was the terminology that the governor is using, like for schools, mm-hmm. how they factor the per kid is going to change, or an attempt is being changed so that, in fact, it wouldn't increase educational dollars. It would can't keep them in the same boat where they are because of how they would figure what is kind of what mm-hmm. the comment was. Do you see that there are other opportunities for that with Prop 30 being in place to redefine things like that?
Well, one of the things that the campaign against Proposition 30 said, and not one penny of new money for schools, as a claim against it, when there wasn't any new money. It was to prevent $6 billion in cuts to schools, or 5.4 and other cuts elsewhere. But so that was somewhat dishonest of that campaign. But what happens is anytime the pie shrinks, the pie of funding for state programs, there's always a fight to over the remaining pieces. And so that's why seeing dedicated, this new funding coming for schools, even though it's not going to increase the amount of funding for schools, it means that there's going to be more funding available for other obligations. Like one of the big ones for us in local government was public safety realignment. You recall that, over the last year we had, I believe, 170 folks released from state prison back to local custody. And some of those went into jail. Some of those go into community supervision.
Pushing things back out into the community, and we're seeing the results of that now.
Yeah, and we're working through that. And we had 1 year's worth of funding with that to begin to implement that. And any funding beyond that was not guaranteed at all, other than through Proposition 30. Without that, we would have had the continuing ongoing obligation of having to work with these new folks that are being released back into the community, and an inability to, put folks, to a limitation on our sentencing folks to state prison. We're going to have a lot more folks staying in local custody or community supervision without any additional money to handle it. So that's why one of the reasons Proposition 30 was really critical to us.
Now, you said guaranteed, and there have been propositions in the past that guaranteed X percent, X dollars, that the governor's office has decided that an IOU is just as good as a guarantee. You guys have it at the courthouse certainly also. Were there any provisions in this thing to prevent IOUs? And that perhaps the state has to suck it up or make cuts rather than passing through funny paper?
The protections for the public safety realignment are put into the Constitution under this. So it becomes constitutional protections for this local funding.
We've only got about 30 seconds before we got to zip, but is there any relief for the border towns with Prop 30? I mean, the sales tax goes up another significant chunk.
Quarter percent.
I'm thinking like Crescent City now. Mm-hmm. Their merchants are 9% in the hole compared to Oregon.
Across the border, yeah.
You look at Nevada and Reno, Tahoe, same. Is there any relief for those communities, or are they just going to basically see another reason for people to leave town?
I don't recall that there's any provision for that for border areas, but keep in mind that when originally proposed, it was going to have a 0.75 cent increase, and instead it only ended up with a quarter after it was merged with the earlier in the year merged with another proposition.
KINS News and Information Time is 3:30.
There's never been a clear winner in the so-called battle of the sexes, but in the battle for bacteria-free hands, one half of the population is germier than the other. So whose hands are cleaner, men or women? Hi, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here's to your health. The researchers tested 51 college students using a new detailed system for detecting bacterial DNA. But remember, most of the bacteria in our bodies is either harmless or beneficial.
Dr. Hoffman answers some of your health questions on Health Talk, Saturday mornings, 9 to 11 on KWSW 980 AM.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Supervisor Mark Lovelace. Mark, as you consider the opportunities that the Democratic Party has now in California, being in control of all three elected bodies statewide, how do you think that's going to play out?
It's one of those things where, you know, as they say, careful what you wish for. And, you know, having, when you have control of both houses and the governorship, you know, there's obviously a lot of power that comes with that, a lot of responsibility, and there's no one else to blame. So it is going to be, you know, kind of a testing moment for...
Yeah, it's tough to blame me for the food that isn't on the table if I'm outside locked out. Mm-hmm. So how do you think it's going to come down? You certainly are more knowledgeable than most of us about the state party structure. Is there an acceptance of what is going on? Do you sense that things are going to be in play? Are we going to see some of the folks who have been around for a long time, either formally elected or informally, having more influence, less influence? What direction? We're going to have a balanced state budget.
I think I'd be surprised to see the approach of, you know, yay, let's go on a spending spree. I don't think that anyone's in the mood for that. And Jerry Brown has been, you know, he's made some of the most difficult cuts to the state that we've seen under any governor. You know, he's been very, 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 very strict on the budget. So, you know, I'd be surprised if we saw, you know, basically just, you know, everyone gets what they want going forward. What I've started hearing some of is suggestions that there might be more of an approach to try to look at some of the some structural changes while they have this this control, to try to make it so that in future years, because, you know, things will go back this way and that way, you know, nothing, trends always reverse eventually. To just try to make it so that Sacramento is just more functional, and, you know, that right now they have so many impediments to be able to do anything there, and it makes it really complicated. It's, you know, by far the most difficult state to govern.
And to do business in, mm-hmm. and to be a citizen in for a lot of folks, too. Do you see that there's going to be a recognition of the cost of the regulatory environment that California has, and try to back that down? That was one of the things that I have seen over the last few weeks, is they talk about business and where business is going, where it's leaving, the cost of doing business. Mm-hmm. California consistently seems to be at the top end. Is there any recognition of that component, or do you see that it's going to be more like in social programs and education, things that aren't directly business related?
Well, there's a really strange dynamic that, you know, seen again and again in government, where sometimes you see the party that you assume is, you know, against this or against that, are in a better position to actually do something on that issue than the other party. When you've got, you know, if you
pull out the antagonism that often is built in.
Yeah, when you see, you know, the Republicans trying to, you know, cut environmental regulations, you're going to get the Democrats doing everything they can to stop it. But if the Democrats have the opportunity to implement some changes in a way that, you know, works for them, to, you know, make it a more functional regulatory environment where it's not reducing the amount of environmental protections, it's just making a more functional method of how we get there, and reducing some of the regulatory burden that goes with
it. The results possibly being the same, but all the garbage in between.
Yeah, but they trust themselves to do it, whereas they wouldn't trust the Republicans to do it.
Right.
Yeah, and so And, you know, on the flip side, go back to the 70s, and, you know, some of the foundations of our environmental laws were all put through by Richard Nixon. So it's, you know, we sometimes it's a little counterintuitive in that way.
A lot of kids in high school are going, what? No, let me, that's it's
Endangered
been long
Species
that.
Act, Clean Water Act.
Too many of the teachers in high school are going, what? With that as a concept. So at the state level, though, the frustration I've heard from yourself, from the other electeds, mm-hmm. from past electeds, is do unto others and then leave the room as far as funding, passing the responsibilities and the funding down, but with no additional funding for those responsibilities. Things like that that have really helped to accentuate the sense that Sacramento is insulated from the locals. Do you think this is going to have a chance to break that up a little bit, or do you think it's going to even be more insulated than what it has been?
I'm not sure what effect it might have on that. I am hoping, though, that one dynamic that I've seen again and again in the last few years has been the state trying to offload its responsibilities onto the local governments. But they do this through this clever way of just saying, here at the state, Sacramento, we're so dysfunctional, we can't do anything right. But you guys in local government, you're closer to the people, you know how to do it, you're showing you can get it done, and we should let you do these things because you're so much better at it, and we're just all incompetent. Oh, and you want money to do it too? Well, we can't do you that part, but we will give you the responsibilities. So I'm hoping that we might be getting towards the end of that piece of trying to flatter local governments into taking on more responsibilities without the resources to do it.
Do they really bother with the flatter?
It's implicit. The whole idea that we're going to move government closer to the people is a way to say we're going to make it your responsibility and not give you the tools to do it.
Yeah, well, then just move the tax dollars back closer to the people.
When fundamentally the problem is, we've got obligations or mandates that we don't have adequate funding for. It's either remove the mandate or give us the funding, but don't just move the mandate to us and keep the funding for yourself.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a link there somewhere between the two. KINS News and Information Times 342. We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
Water always wins. That's why there's a Grand Canyon. I'm Glenn Higgy, America's master handyman. Keeping water away from your home's foundation is one of the most important things you can do. If your home is on a crawl space, you need to know what is going on under your feet. Your home's structural integrity and your family's health may depend on it.
Listen to Glenn Higgy Sunday morning, 7 to 8 a.m. on KWSW 980.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mark Lovelace. Mark, the situation you guys have got with the general plan, I don't know. I'm sure that there's some parallels we could draw between that and the state, but let's not do that. I sense it's getting to the point of Etch-a-Sketch. Are you?
Pick it up, shake it, and start over? I'm hoping not, because to me that would be a really short-sighted approach. The assumption that somehow we can get this done faster and quicker by starting all over. There's a tremendous amount of work that's gone into it, and what gets missed by folks that have not been a part of this process over the course of the 12 years that we've been working on it is understanding that the reason it's taken 12 years is because that's exactly what the public has demanded. The people that have been involved in this all through the course of time have wanted to have their voices heard. They've asked again and again for additional hearings, for more workshops, for outreach to this group, to that group, and the board of supervisors has repeatedly sent the plan, told staff to go out and do meetings here, do meetings there, all of that takes time, and it's been guided by the community every step of the way, and represents a diverse community. So, one of the reasons no one's happy with the plan is because no one gets everything they want. None of the community members, none of the community groups, special interest groups, none of the planning commissioners that worked on it. It's a compromise document and represents, I believe, the closest to compromise that we're going to get in Humboldt County.
Is there any consideration to adopt certain elements, the ones that aren't seeming to get the attention, the ones that seems to have more agreement, and get those things off the table, and then just deal with the 2 or the 3 or the 4 or the 29 or 30 or however many there are that are the bones of contention?
Well, what was handed to us from the Planning Commission after they'd gone through the entire plan, policy by policy, line by line, they'd done their best to come to consensus, if not broad agreement, on every single policy. But there were some that they weren't able to get there. Some where they ended up with a, 3-2, or since, 7-member commission, sometimes a 3-4 or 5-2 or whatever type of vote. And where there was that kind of division, staff flagged those what they called the short list. And basically that was the Planning Commission's worked through this painstakingly over the course of 4 years, and all we have left for us are the ones that they weren't able to get to some kind of consensus on. And so that's what was given to us. And with that, we would have had a very short list of policies for us to work through and make those kinds of decisions. But the board chose instead to add to that list of policies, and in some elements, like with the infrastructure element that we're working on now, to put all of them back in play and work through the entire thing. And so it's become cumbersome because the board has chosen to make it cumbersome. What was a very simple task presented to us, the board's choosing to essentially go back and rewrite something that the Planning Commission already did for us. And if that was the board's intent, it really causes the question, why did we bother running it through the Planning Commission at all if we were going to start from scratch and redo the whole thing?
Is part of it because of uncomfortableness or part of it because of unfamiliarity?
I think it's unfamiliarity. And as we're having discussions, there's times where, it's just general concepts of the general plan are coming up, and questions about, trying to understand why certain policies are there, some of the laws that guide what we have to do.
So some of that stuff should settle down after the next 3 or 4 months.
I would hope. Right now what's happened is a lot of the special interest groups that have been, providing input, fighting over the general plan for years and years, have decided to try to work together and see if they can come up with something in terms of, a list of the policies they can agree on, or, I'm not sure what form it'll take, but try to tell us how much of the general plan they can agree on, and give us essentially their own short list. And so it would be interesting if that's what they come back
with. The strange bedfellow syndrome.
To be able to see, if that's what they come back with, to see how closely that mimics the Planning Commission short list. And my guess is, that the differences on the Planning Commission were probably, somewhat the same because they were hearing from these diverse groups.
Well, time will tell. I guess it's the simplest way of that, huh?
Unfortunately, at our last meeting, our board chose to not continue to review the general plan at all until we hear back from this group. And no matter what they come back with, we can't let this outside, private process replace the public process. We still have work to do.
Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having
me. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Nah, probably you don't have to worry about us showing up at your place.
Not sure we'll be there.
Yeah, maybe you need to be concerned. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.